Welcome to the Anti-Woke Podcast. So artificial intelligence basically came out a little over a year ago, and there's been ebbs and flows in the advancement of it. And 3 or 4 months ago, there was a lull, and it was like, well, maybe this stuff isn't gonna to the moon. But this last month, and really the last week or two, stuff has been going crazy. So Anthropic, which is probably the biggest rival to OpenAI, they released Claude 3, which beats ChatGPT-4. And everything I'm going to talk about is behind a paywall, or more likely not even released to the public. But I tried whatever Claude is free, and it was damn smart. It's also more woke. But anyways, the AIs are getting smarter. Were they going to get? We were like, I don't know, they're not getting any smarter. Yep, they are. And then a month ago, I already mentioned, OpenAI came out with Sora, which is text to video. Looks as good as a nature documentary or a high budget movie. I think they're saying the public will get to use it in 6 months, roughly. And so there's been this question about consistent characters, which is like, say you have a AI create you a comic book. Well, you don't want the superhero to look completely different in every single panel. And so Midjourney, which is the top dog of creating images, they came out with a thing where you can create consistent characters. So it was kind of like, are they ever going to be able to do it? They've done it. And if you can do it in images, you can do it in video. So basically, I think comic book artists, they probably got about a year of drawing before they're out of a job. And movies are maybe 2 years away from being all AI. And it requires computers in a giant building with air conditioning, you know, running 24/7 to make this stuff. It requires a lot of electricity, requires a lot of money. I did some back of the napkin math. I think it would cost about $1,700 to make a 2-hour movie. So you're not going to be able to sit down to your Netflix and say, I want a movie starring me as a mafia leader or whatever. Because Netflix would be like, okay, well, that'll be $1,700, and it'll take us a month to make it. I think it's about 1 minute of movie takes an hour of the computer. But anyways, a couple grand, a couple months, versus whatever it costs to make a movie today, and it'll have the best special effects of any movie ever made. And then Figure.ai, which makes robot bodies, really cool-looking, fancy, you know, metal-colored ones, like, they partnered with OpenAI to use ChatGPT-4 as a brain. I think they did that like a couple weeks ago. Anyways, they came out, they've gotten it almost to work pretty damn good just in this last week. They came out with a video where the robot is standing in front of a counter, and on that counter is a dish drying rack with some dishes in it. And then there's some other dishes on the counter with an apple on one of the dishes. And then there's some trash on the counter. And a human comes up and is like, hey, robot, I'm hungry. And the robot's like, well, here, how about an apple? Picks up the apple, gives it to the guy. And the guy's like, well, what do you think we should do with the dishes that are on the counter? The robot's like, huh, maybe we should put them in the drying rack. Picks up the dishes, puts them in the drying rack, a cup and a plate. And then the human picks up a trash basket and kind of holds it out towards the robot. And he's like, oh, let's pick up that trash, robot. And the robot picks it up and kind of tosses it into the trash bin. So it looks like robots that can do what a McDonald's worker can do, that's probably a couple of years away also. Although that's a little different. I think, you know, if you're in Hollywood, you lost your job in 2 years. If you're a McDonald's worker, you're not going to be replaced by a robot. I don't know how much that robot costs to make, but it costs more than it costs to hire a McDonald's worker. And then I don't know if there's a giant warehouse of computers that is running that robot as its brain, using up $1 million of electricity every day, or, you know, or who knows. And it was announced this week that Apple bought something called Darwin AI, which is a company that is working on taking AI and getting it to work on small devices like an iPhone. And Apple's been kind of left in the dust on AI, but if they can get AI to work on your iPhone, then they'll be right back in the game. And then for every job you can think of, like doctor, lawyer, accountant, whatever, anything that an AI might be able to replace the job, there's a company who is like trying to make the replacement for that profession. But the interesting one that we learned about this week is a product called Devin. I think it's kind of short for developer. And it's a software engineer, trying to replace the job of software engineer. And in the demo they had for it, basically had a screen split up into different things. Like one part was a web browser, one part was a place for typing in programming languages. And I think another part of the screen was for interacting with whoever's controlling it. And the person is like, okay, Devin, write me a program that does, I can't remember what, let's just say inventory for a warehouse. And Devin's like, okay, I've never done one of those before. Let me go on the internet and find examples of programs that can, you know, that do inventory for a warehouse. I'll see how they do it, and then I'll make my own. So you see some like lightning fast web browsing. And then over in the other part of the screen where the programming goes, that thing is just fills up with code at lightning speed. And then what was really cool, if you ever done any programming, but the thing never works. And so you put in little print statements so that you can keep track of what's going on and find the error. And so that's exactly what it did. It was putting in little print statements, seeing what they said, going, oh, that's not what it's supposed to be. Going to that place in the code, fixing it, run it again, fix it, run it again, fix it, run it again. Hey, it works. So is that going to put all the software engineers out of a job? Not all of them. I mean, it sounds like, you know, if you're a $500,000 a year software engineer at Google, you probably just get put in charge of 100 AI programmers. Your salary goes to $5 million a year, and then 49 software engineers have to, I don't know, go off and do something else. And productivity has been, you know, quintupled. Actually, forget all those numbers. Who the hell knows what's going to happen? But I was listening to some guy who's basically trying to do the same thing. He has his own company. And he was saying, imagine how the world would be different if gasoline cost $30,000 a gallon. Well, we currently live in a world where programming basically costs $30,000 a gallon, and it's about to cost $3 a gallon. What that does, who knows, but it's going to be crazy. Just for fun, let's bring race into this. So 20 years ago, I had some medical problems that kind of messed up my life pretty big. But at the time, there was research being done on issues similar to what I had, and I was like, you know, I think in 5 years, they're going to cure my problems, and then it'll save my life. I was doing artificial intelligence in graduate school. I had to drop out of all that stuff. I was going to be a millionaire. None of that happened. But I was like, you know, in 5 years, I think they'll lick this problem, and I'll go back to doing artificial intelligence in graduate school, get a PhD, and be a millionaire. It's going to be amazing. Anyways, none of that happened. But part of my thinking back then was based on 20 years ago was kind of the rise of China. And I was like, Americans are kind of working to solve my medical problems. Pretty soon, Chinese people will be working to solve medical problems. That's a country with five times as many people. That number ain't right. Anyways, but so I'm going to make up some numbers. I'm going to say, like, as far as cutting edge solving of technology problems, medical problems, 20 years ago, it was probably America did 65% of it, and then like Europe and Japan did the other 35%, or maybe it was 80-20. And anyways, that's still how it is today. It's probably, you know, AI advancements, it's probably 80% America, 20% the rest of the world, and China is not even really that much of a factor, although they are going to be the ones building the robot bodies. But to be crass, maybe the Chinese aren't worthless. Like, there's this thing where Brahmins have become CEOs of a bunch of the biggest companies in America. Brahmins are like the Ubermensch from India. And so South Asians in America are getting stuff done. I don't think India is doing anything itself. And then, you know, the killer advantage that America has, of course, is the Jews. So Google, that's Jews. OpenAI, Jews. I mean, Adam Sandler, I think the last I checked, he was on his seventh version of the Hanukkah song that just lists all the amazing things that Jews have done. I mean, it's endless. But I watch YouTube channels where they go over AI advances, and they'll get out like a research paper from OpenAI or whatever, And every time they do that, on the, you know, at the top of these papers, well, there's the title, but almost the very first thing on these papers is the names of the people who wrote the paper. And there's usually 5 to 10 names. And usually you'd see, like, either, you'd see a lot of Eastern European names, which means, like, normal kind of white people or Jews. And then you see a bunch of Indian-sounding names, which, you know, means Brahmin. But lately, more and more, I'm seeing Chinese names. And, like, you know, if there's 10 names, starting to be 5 of those names are Chinese. So this amazing world where China pulls its weight in advancing technology, it's kind of happened. I mean, let's put it racist way. You know, America's doing half of the advancement. China's doing half of the advancement. But it's Chinese people in America. And a lot of these people are just Americans of Chinese descent. That Devon thing I talked about, the CEO of that is a Chinese-looking guy. There's a video of him online as a kid, like, winning the, I don't know, Mathletes National Championship or something. Anyways, he's been in America at least since he was a little kid and probably his whole life. Although I bet his parents have an accent. There was a couple anti-white racism things this week. So Tucker Carlson did a couple-hour sit-down with, I think his name is Chris Cuomo. Used to be the darling host of CNN. Now he's on News Nation, which is like one of, there's a cable news channel you never heard of, but it exists. But anyways, they had kind of a long discussion about affirmative action being racist, stuff like that. And it's pretty easy for Tucker Carlson to be like, I live in America. I learned that we don't discriminate on the basis of skin color ever. And Chris Cuomo didn't really come back with, you know, a full-throated all these reasons of why fuck whites. It was more like he hadn't heard anyone say that kind of thing to him. He's like, huh, what do you say when someone says you should never discriminate on the basis of race? I don't have the answer. You know, I know that ain't right. I know that ain't true. You should discriminate on the basis of race. But I don't know how to say that without, you know, sounding racist. And then there's a woman called Sam Kerr that I never heard of. But she's like the best female soccer player in Australian history. And she's a celebrity to them. I have some Australian listeners. They probably heard of her. And she almost looks white. She kind of looks like she has some sort of flavor. I guess she's part South Asian, maybe. But she was in London and doing something minor that she shouldn't. And so got involved with a cop. And the cop says she called him a stupid white bastard. I think she says she called him a stupid white cop. And so they charged her with something that was minor, like disrespecting a police officer or something. But then they added a charge of, you know, racial disrespect, or I don't know what, being racist. And this is London, UK, where they got, you know, they don't have freedom of speech and stuff like that. So they got different laws. Like they send cops to your house if you say something racist on Facebook. Sometimes. Although I think not usually racist against whites. I don't know. Anyways, I don't know how these London cops, I think they're pretty damn woke. I don't know how they decided to do this, but they did it. And then it's more of an Australian story. They care about this Sam Kerr person. And so Australian politicians are like, no, she's not racist. Basically, you cannot be racist against whites. And then there's some other soccer celebrity that I never heard of who his whole life, he's now retired, is devoted to fighting racism. And someone asked him about this, and he's like, oh yeah, she shouldn't have said that. You know, racism is a real big problem. And then behind the scenes, people got real mad at him. You know, one drop of South Asian. You heard of the one drop rule? This is the one drop of South Asian rule. And so he went online and was like, well, you know, I thought racism was this, but I went and looked it up. And there's like the Diversity Council of Australia or something. And he quoted them, and it was kind of funny. I went and looked it up. What do they say? Racism is when an individual or organization with race-based societal power discriminates, blah, blah, blah. So in America, when we want to come up with some bullshit about how you can't be racist against whites and fuck whites, we say racism is power plus privilege. And then we probably say Asians have power, Hispanics have power, We don't care about Native Americans, but we'll steal their valor to give it to black people. But anyways, instead of power plus privilege in Australia, it is race-based societal power. So anyways, if you're a millionaire celebrity sports star, you don't have racial societal power. You got every other kind of power under the moon, but you don't have race-based societal power. But really, what's funny about that is this Sam Kerr soccer player, she does have race-based societal power. I mean, you know, everything is the opposite. Just the true meaning is the opposite of what people say. Because she has a drop of South Asian blood, she has gotten every white Australian to just fall in line and just bow down to her. I mean, talk about all powerful. And it's based on her race and society. It looks like Derek Chauvin, the cop who was convicted of murdering George Floyd, got railroaded. Like the fact that him and his knee on the neck of George Floyd is what killed George Floyd, and that has been proven beyond a reasonable doubt, is not true. It may be true, but it hasn't been proven beyond a reasonable doubt. And you know, 2 years ago, this was my bread and butter. I would have talked about this for an hour, probably two different podcasts, an hour long each. But if you want to know more, you could check out the Just Asking Questions podcast from Reason. They had Coleman Hughes on there, and it's a debate, and he just, I think he proves what I told you there. They did not meet the bar of beyond a reasonable doubt, and they didn't get that close to it. And I know the Glenn Show podcast has been doing some episodes on it. It's all because of this movie called The Fall of Minneapolis. And then, well, this debate with Coleman Hughes, they were like, we're here to tell you why The Fall of Minneapolis isn't a good movie. And Coleman Hughes is like, I'm here to tell you why the court case did not prove it beyond a reasonable doubt. And they were probably right about how that movie wasn't a great movie. And he was right about how the court case did not prove it beyond a reasonable doubt. So we're waiting on Trump to pick his vice president to see if he's going to pick neocon Nikki Haley or what. But the Washington think tank, the Heritage Foundation, it has people who are writing papers and policy plans and, you know, day one, hour one, minute one, second one of the Trump presidency. What are we going to do? We want to hit the ground running. And so I want to know. I mean, I don't want to read all those papers, but, you know, is the Heritage Foundation, is this like the old school George W. Bush Republican type of thing? Where all they care about is screwing over the middle class, giving to the rich, and making wars abroad? Or is it the new populist MAGA Trump thing where you help out the middle class and you don't make wars abroad? So I went and looked for Heritage Foundation podcasts. And their CEO, or whatever, the guy in charge is Kevin Roberts, and he has a podcast. And he's sounding populist, you know, we need to fix our border before we fix Ukraine's border. And he's been in charge of the Heritage Foundation for, I think, like a year and a half. So he's new. I don't know who they had before him. Anyways, and then the Morning Wire podcast had some other Heritage Foundation person on there. And that person was just straight up your classic piece of shit Republican from 20 years ago. So the answer is, the Heritage Foundation has always been just your piece of crap Republican think tank. You know, don't give a damn about the average American at all. We'll say that they do and then stab you in the back. But because of Trump and the possibility of getting back to the White House, they are changing. And so, basically, the jury is out. They were part of the deep state. A lot of the people who have been working there for a long time are the same as they've ever been. They basically are the deep state that likes to roll Trump up and smoke him. But maybe they're changing, and so we shall see. I had two interactions on Spotify in the past week. The question I ask is, what's pissing you off this week? Eric said, I'm fed up to the back teeth with the left's profound obsession with racism. They really seem to own it, and they're not letting go. My solution is to ignore them, work hard, and employ nobody. And thanks for the comment, Eric, and I'd say, sounds about right to me. And Sexy Fingers said, paying tax that gets spent on woke agendas. Thanks for the comment, Sexy Fingers, and yeah, that's definitely annoying. And word of mouth is the number one way that people get turned on to podcasts. So please tell someone about this podcast. So Next Benedict was a non-binary girl in Oklahoma who died. And there was a hate crime hoax saying that she was killed because she was non-binary. But we learned this week that it was suicide. So, I mean, I saw NBC Nightly News had a segment on this, like back when it happened. It's probably been 3-4 weeks. And they basically said it was murder because she was non-binary. So, anyways, no one's going to mention it anymore. It was a hate crime hoax. LGBTQ whatevers all across Twitter. I guess, you know, they got to say a murder happened and they're not going to care that they were proved wrong. And unfortunately, the Biden administration kept their powder dry. They didn't talk about it for the, you know, the first week when everyone was saying it was murder. And then when we found out it was suicide, they're like, oh yeah, America's racist against non-binaries and they caused her suicide. So Biden did not get caught with his pants down on this one. I like to talk about crime and mass shootings, but there hasn't been much in the news lately. I mean, people are out still shooting, but anyways, just not in the news. But a bunch of crimes and videos of those crimes didn't just happen in Miami Beach, Florida. So Miami Beach is famous for young black people going there on spring break and just, well, committing crimes. There's lots of videos of like giant crowds of black people just running away from someone shooting off their gun, and then you ran towards some other black person shooting off their gun, and the whole crowd has to turn around and run the other direction. So Miami Beach instituted like a hardcore curfew, can't sell alcohol after, I don't know what, you know, 6 p.m. or something. No alcohol on the beach. Ron DeSantis sent a ton of cops there. They instantly tow your car, $100 to park. And I guess the spring break, is it spring break already? Anyways, would have happened, I don't know, last week. And they didn't have a problem. And Miami Beach came out with a commercial that was kind of funny. It showed these people like talking to the camera as if the camera is a person. And they're like, I'm breaking up with you. It's not me, it's you. And it has different people doing this. It's like, you know, one person be like, you've been drinking too much. I don't like that. Another person's like, and you get violent. Maybe when we get older and you're in a different phase of your life, you know, we can rethink things. But for now, I'm breaking up with you. And they took great pains in making the commercial to not indicate to the viewer they're talking to black men. There's not a black man in the video at all. I mean, I don't know. You have to imagine, because the camera is a black man, but they never turn the camera around to look at itself. The Oscars happened. Oppenheimer won 7. Poor Things won 4. Zone of Interest, whatever that is, I think won 2. No one else won more than 1. There wasn't that much diversity in the winners. Didn't seem to be much hand-wringing about diversity this time. Kate Middleton, the wife of Prince Harry? No, William. The good wife, not the other wife. Anyways, she hasn't been seen in public for 2.5 months. And it's not a thing I follow, but that's a pretty long time. People are coming up with fun conspiracy theories about it. And who knows, by the time you hear this, she'll probably have made an appearance. The Georgia election case, where the DA was screwing her worker and paying him a ton of money, and he was taking her on vacations, and then supposedly she paid him back in cash, and then he didn't deposit it, and she doesn't have any bank records of taking it out. Anyways, the judge was like, it's fine. He gave her a verbal reprimand, but the nuclear option of pulling her off the case and then that would just blow the whole thing up as far as anything happening before the election. He did not do that. He left her on there. I mean, she obviously committed perjury when she said she paid the guy back in cash, because she said that kind of stuff under oath. The judge did say the boyfriend has to go. That doesn't matter. And I don't think anyone really thought the judge was going to throw it out. It's the regime protecting itself. It has to. Otherwise, it'd be replaced by a different regime that does protect itself. All right, people in power are in power because they keep all the power and go get more power. And if you don't do that, you'll be replaced by someone who will. And if you blow up every court case against the little guy because the people in charge are going after him and they're unethical, well, then that'll blow up half the court cases. So you can't do that. But the whole thing did burn through a good amount of time and made it look like a kangaroo court politically motivated prosecution of Trump. I'll say what's interesting is I was listening to like NPR and I think NBC Nightly News, and they were both like, wow, that judge really came down hard on the corrupt prosecutor that he didn't throw off the case. And I think they're putting it like that. Right-wing people are like, oh, he came down easy. But the mainstream media is saying he came down hard. I think that's to try and give the judge credibility in the fact that he didn't just blow it up with a nuclear bomb. Come on, people. This case is credible, just like all of them. They're all credible. There's no witch hunts over here. So Disney Plus is coming out with an X-Men cartoon called X-Men 97, which is supposed to be a continuation of the 90s X-Men cartoon. And Disney just fired the guy who created this new version. And we don't know why they fired him, but they fired him. It wasn't like, oh, we had to part ways, or, you know, he needs to spend more time with his family, or there's a lot of thing euphemisms you usually use. They're like, you know, it was in the trades, Hollywood Reporter. They're like, Disney fired Bo DeMeo is his name. And so we don't know what he did, but it's probably something pretty extreme because Bo DeMeo is a gay black man. And if you're Disney, you do not fire your gays without good reason. And you really don't fire your blacks without good reason. And you sure as hell don't fire your gay blacks without having a hell of a reason. And Bo DeMeo used to have an OnlyFans account where he dressed in skimpy outfits for gay dudes to look at. And no one thinks that's the reason he got fired specifically, but it's starting to sound to me like it's something sexual. So just, you know, tale as old as time, song as old as rhyme. Disney hires someone based on diversity and then has to fire them because they are a sexual predator. Probably. Let's talk Israel. So America's building that port to give food to the Palestinians. I think I already mentioned this, but it's going to take them 2 months, so maybe that's just a delaying tactic. And then Chuck Schumer is the Senate Majority Leader. Apparently he's the most powerful Jew in American politics ever. And he came out and said that Benjamin Netanyahu, the guy in charge of Israel, needs to be fired and replaced with someone else. And it seems like the Biden administration put him up to it. They're worried about the upcoming election, where they want to support Israel, but they also want to seem tough on Israel because people on the farther left part are not liking Biden over this stuff. So they're, you know, that's how they're going to split the baby. Support the actual war part, but say bad things about Netanyahu. And then in Israel, Netanyahu is not popular at all. A lot of people blame him for the October 7th massacre. But it looks like a foreign country telling them that they got to get rid of their prime minister or president, whatever he is the one thing that might make him popular over there again. So it may backfire. We shall see. Have this thought. What if Trump was president and he supported Israel as much as Biden has? Like, you know, an equal amount. I think virtually every Democrat in America would have gone super anti-Israel. That would have been Israel. Come on, Jews, over to the anti-woke side. Maybe Trump will win, and the war will still be going on. And in the Ukraine war, there's something going on with Russia blowing up fancy foreign equipment that Ukraine has. Like, I got a list. This is from a YouTube comment, and I don't think it's right, but this is roughly what happened. So Russia has blown up 5 Abrams tanks. That's the American tanks, the best ones. 3 HIMARS. That's the fancy thing that people were talking about a year ago. And then 2 Patriot missile or S-300, which is the German version, batteries. And the Patriot missile, like, that's the, it's damn fancy missile thing that'll shoot airplanes out of the sky. Each missile costs like $4 million. Oh, right, and they blew up 3 helicopters, too. And the way you know they blew stuff up is there's video of it. If there ain't video, it didn't happen. And like with the HIMARS, I think they have maybe 25 HIMARS. So losing three, it's not like they lost half their HIMARS. It's just that they had lost zero until like 2 weeks ago. And it's kind of the same with everything. Like stuff that they had not lost any of, all of a sudden they're losing a bunch of, or some of. And so we don't know why, but people are theorizing that they're running out of air defense ammunition or something. I don't know. Air defense, whatever it is. Whatever defends them from stuff in the air, they're running out of it. Which means Russia can send their drones farther in to spot stuff, and then they can launch their missiles from a long ways back. Like basically, sounds like the issue. The issue is not having missiles that can destroy stuff. Russia's got that part covered. Their problem is finding the exact coordinates of stuff. And they've gotten better at that somehow in the last couple of weeks. And the video quality of the stuff being destroyed is a lot better. Like it's a fancier drone or something taking the video. And there's a couple theories. I mean, first one is America's not sending them enough stuff. That's probably true. Part of it, all of it, we don't know. They just changed their general. The guy in charge just got swapped out. And, it's, you know, so is he screwing up? Or there's a theory that, like, some of the new people in charge are Russian spies and are sending the coordinates. But a guy on YouTube was saying that generals don't know, like, the specific coordinates of each thing that they control. They control tons and tons of different things. They don't know the coordinates of each one. So the fact that they're blowing up HIMARS and helicopters and Patriot missiles, like the coordinates of each of those things are only known by individual people. So you need three, you know, you need the helicopter guy to tell you the helicopter coordinates, a HIMARS guy to tell you the HIMARS coordinates, etc. So it's unlikely that it's a spy. And then there's this drone that Russia has been developing called the S-70, which is like really big, really fancy. It, you know, it's all geometry faceted. You know, it looks like you carved it out of a diamond kind of shape. And it's all hush hush. But I was watching a guy on YouTube, Willie Ohm, OAM, and he went and found, like, you know, Russia was like, in 2019, Russia said, in 5 years, we're going to have our S-70 program, you know, popping these suckers out. So maybe the S-70 is in there now. I can't remember the name. Maybe the SU-76. So Russia is trying to come out with a new generation of fighter jet to try and compete with America's ones. And so the idea is the new generation of fighter jet, which, like I say, I don't know if they have that one out yet. The jet has three of these S-70 super fancy giant diamond drones that go along with it. I mean, I don't know. This is like something out of Top Gun Maverick where, you know, the one person has all these robot drones with it. And anyways, who knows? Maybe they got that stuff together. I doubt that one, but that would be crazy. So I've been hearing and saying that the average Ukrainian soldier is really old, maybe 42 years old. But I learned this week there's more to that number because the draft, I think you call it a mobilization for some reason. They don't force men under 27 into the military. I think because even before the war, they were having a population crash, not enough babies. I think that's why, but anyways, for whatever reason, they're not forcing men in their 20s into the military, although they can sign up if they want. Elon Musk's company, SpaceX, had their third Starship test this week, which is the largest flying object that has ever been created. It's the biggest, it's the most, it's the everythingest in all ways. And it looks like, I mean, it almost worked. You know, they just keep making them and testing them and trying them. And then, you know, they blow up after a few miles. Oh, they blow up after making it hundreds of miles. Oh, they blow up after going around the whole Earth. And so it looks like we're a couple years away from being able to put, like, train locomotives into orbit if we want, just giant heavy things. And there's even talk of replacing passenger airplane rides like New York to London in 13 minutes. We'll see on that one, because rockets require a lot more fuel than airplanes. So we'll see if our AI masters allow us to do that to the environment. But if we can, I'm going to Australia. And one of the main reasons Elon Musk is doing this, I mean, he says it's to go to Mars. You know, you set yourself a goal that is so far beyond everything else, then you're going to achieve all sorts of amazing stuff going there. It's a strategy. So in the near term, he wants to put a bunch of Starlink satellites into orbit. I mean, there's 1,000 or maybe 10,000 of them now, but I think it's like 1,000. He wants to have 40,000. And basically, it's just internet that covers the globe. Fast internet. And I mentioned last week that Ukraine is having great success taking out the Russian Navy by taking top-of-the-line Kawasaki jet skis and putting full in them with explosives and attaching them to controlling them with Starlink. And basically, 10 jet skis can take out a giant naval ship. If Elon Musk lets you use Starlink to do it. So it got me thinking. Ukraine is sending out groups of 10 jet skis at a time. I mean, how many jet skis could America come up with? Could we come up with 1,000 of them? We could come up with 1,000,000 of them. 1,000,000 jet skis at $20,000 in each. That's $20 billion. I mean, that's nothing compared, you know, that's whatever. That's one aircraft carrier, and it's like a 20th of a yearly defense budget. And jet skis full of explosives is not enough. You got to have the remote control internet aspect of Starlink, which China doesn't have. I think every country, after realizing what Ukraine did to Russia, is going to be trying to get their own satellite internet. But it made me look up, how long after America developed the atomic bomb did Russia come up with the bomb? It took them 6 years. So basically, if America has remote control jet skis that explode, and of course make a bunch of flying drones that are controlled through the internet, we could maybe get into war with China and just crush them like instantly. Or maybe it'll be like this classic thing where, oh, everyone will convince the president, hey, it'll be easy, and then it'll turn out to be harder than you think. And maybe if you don't have the satellite internet, you can come up with AI fast enough to have that control them. But I think we're about to get into a classic arms race. And, you know, it's not going to be like the old days, because we do all have nukes waiting in the wings. Or maybe satellite internet can take out nuclear missiles and protect us, so we're like, we don't care about your nukes. And like, America could defeat the Russian army really easy, but then Russia attacks Ukraine and America, like, doesn't actually go in boots on the ground itself because they don't want to get nukes in return. But basically, it's like nuclear weapons all over again, except they're controlled by one man, Elon Musk. And I worry about someone assassinating him. If he's smart, I hope he has it like all the SpaceX computers are hooked up to a thing that double checks that his retina is attached to a living human being. And if they don't see that retina once a month, they just wipe themselves and destroy everything. And I don't mean because China's going to kill him. It'll be the CIA. And to think a little further, the war with China is going to be over Taiwan, which is an island. So for that one, all you need is the satellite internet jet skis. And I was listening to John Mearsheimer on the Judge Napolitano YouTube channel Saturday night. And he said something that I don't know about, but I'm going to start keeping an eye on. So under Obama, our policy with China was to be friends, engagement. And then under Trump, it became kind of a frenemy disengagement policy. And then Joe Biden kept the exact same policies as Trump when he was president. Now, all that's true. I remember that stuff because the media was like, these Trump policies are worse than Hitler. And then Joe Biden got in and kept the exact same policies and the media was silent. But Mearsheimer said that Biden has had to back off because the Ukraine war and the Israel war are taking so much of our attention that we can't stick it to China the way we would like, and we've kind of had to go back to being nice to them. So just something I'm going to keep an eye on. So here's a really long segment that's kind of stream of consciousness, so I want to set it up. And I think it's about how much power does the media have? Maybe. And also, I don't think I'm very good at knowing the difference between the Crusades and the Spanish Inquisition. There's something going on with the media that I'm trying to describe, but I'm having trouble. It's a combination of things. It's Americans don't trust the media, plus media organizations have been going out of business, plus the only way to destroy your opponent in the culture wars is to get them to go too far. You can't destroy them. They have to destroy themselves. Trump. And then how long can you be deranged when the facts of reality are contradicting your derangement? And what does it feel like to be pushing out capital the truth TM when it just doesn't jibe with the truth? So I want some numbers that quantify what I'm talking about. I don't have those numbers. You go to war with the army you have. And so a quick Google search came back with 32% of Americans trust the media, 1 in 3. And the media has a pro-Democrat, anti-Republican bias. So obviously Democrats trust the media a whole bunch more, and then Republicans don't trust it. And trust in the media went up, up, up during Trump's presidency because, you know, Trump is worse than, you know, media outlets were like, Trump is worse than Hitler. And people were like, I believe that. I trust you now more. The more you say Trump is worse than Hitler, the more I trust you. So since like the 70s, trust in the media, I think it was at the peak at maybe 1973 or so, the end of the Vietnam War. And it's been going down, down, down slowly ever since. And it went up during Trump is worse than Hitler's presidency and then has continued going back down now. Maybe Trump is worse than Hitler is the phrase I'm trying to come up with. Remember, your brain doesn't create the words. Your thoughts don't create words. Words create your thoughts. But there was a golden age of cable news during the Trump is worse than Hitler era. It went during his presidency, and then January 6th actually, you know, that would have been the end of it. But then January 6th gave it another year of life, I think. And that was the years that cable news could do no wrong. People were watching it like crazy. People always watched Fox News. It's just like old people watching it, and they could sell advertising about, you know, take your money out of stocks and put it into gold, or, you know, other things that are basically ripping off the viewer. And it would be the same ad over and over. And if you're a younger person watching it, you're like, Jesus, I'm tired of these stupid ads. Basically like cold calling old people and saying you're a Nigerian prince and trying to rip them off. But anyways, Fox News did that for a long time. MSNBC, which was the, I think was straight down the middle because it had a more business aspect at one point, but they went left wing and then, and they never had the viewership at all. But then Trump is worse than Hitler, you know, from 2016 to 2022, and MSNBC was getting huge ratings, CNN also. Well, let's call it 2021. I wish January 6th had happened in 2020, because it's of a piece of all the riots of 2020, but dang it, it happened in January in the next year. It makes it difficult. Well, and then viewership has gone down, and readership, etc., and trust has gone down. So we know all that. And then after the 2008 housing crisis, we've been in the era of ZERP. Which ZERP is zero interest rate, something with a P. And so smartphones were getting big and media companies were trying to get, you know, try to go mobile. And also just new media companies were being created to take advantage of this new mobile ecosystem. And money was free because of ZERP. And Facebook had been around, and that was so you could talk to your family members. But Twitter was getting big as they gave out blue check marks to employees of these new media companies. And so highly educated, politically motivated people could all be friends and talk to each other on Twitter with the blue check. If you had that, your voice mattered. If you didn't have that, your voice didn't matter. It gave people a lot of power. And then COVID and inflation, ZERP ended, all these new media companies started going out of business, especially lately. And the old media companies are just losing money hand over fist, laying people off. We don't know. We don't know if some of them are going to go away. It'll be interesting if you know, the Washington Post or it ain't gonna be the New York Times, they're making money, actually goes out of business. Something that's been around 100 years. We're waiting for one of them to go out of business. Hasn't happened yet. And then Elon Musk bought Twitter and started charging $8 a month for a blue check. And everyone with a blue check, they have the money. I mean, you know, $8 a month to have power. Anyways, they're like, nope, I'm going to give away all my power as a statement against Elon Musk. And this is at the same time that they lost their job writing for some venture capital propped up media outlet. So basically, it was just like, poof, their voice is gone. They were powerful being read and influencing the world, and then they're just gone. They're like on Blue Sky or Threads or who even knows. I mean, basically, there was just a ton of people who would, they were in the business of Trump is worse than Hitler, and they would get up every morning and head to their keyboards, and they were just excited and motivated and just having a really, really good time. You know, I guess the smartphone, right? So they go to their smartphone. It's an addictive little device. And when you're in the Trump is worse than Hitler business, I think it was just insanely fun, but it's over now. There's a lot of people paid money that they shouldn't have been paid to do that stuff, but a ton of people just doing it for free, just for the joy. And that goes, you know, into how long can you be deranged? I don't know, but I think the answer is you can't do it forever. Well, this is something I think about. How long can you believe things that are not true? How long can you just live in an alternate reality when reality contradicts it? Open question, but it's seeming to me like in the age of the internet, you cannot believe false things forever. But maybe in the past, you could do it. You know, you'd be born, you just believe a bunch of false things, and then you die, and then another generation would follow you and do the same thing. Let's pick on the Christians here for a second. The Crusades. So there's a narrative about the Crusades being bad. Almost every time you look into these things, it's a false narrative. So the Crusades was probably nothing but helping people, stopping Muslims from raping children or something. But let's just use the narrative. So the narrative is that, Spanish soldiers or something, they headed off towards the Holy Land and they killed a bunch of innocent people and they were trying to convert them to Christianity. And the way sometimes they would do that is they would torture you to death. And I guess right before you died of being tortured, you'd say, okay, fine, I convert to Christianity. And they'd be like, well, he's dead now from torture, but we saved his soul. You know, what's a couple weeks of torture when you have everlasting joy in heaven? And so, like I say, that's probably not really true. But whatever it was they had going on back then, they did it for generation after generation. I think the Crusades went on for 100 years or maybe a few hundred. But stuff seems to be going a lot faster now after the internet was invented. And maybe, who knows, maybe TV. I'm sure TV sped things up. The printing press, etc. And then the way to defeat your opponent is to make them go too far. Like fake news was Fox News until Donald Trump basically said those words. You know, did he say those words because it was already happening or did that make it happen? Hard to say, but the mainstream media just started lying. You know, if you weren't lying, you weren't trying to stop Trump, who is worse than Hitler. And the media had been becoming Democrat shills kind of for a while, but you know, it wasn't that full-throated. The media was part propaganda, but not all propaganda. But the propaganda was pro-Democrat. So how do you, that's annoying. That's annoying. They're always putting their thumb on the scale for the Democrats. How do you defeat them? Well, you make them just put 100% of their credibility on the line pro-Democrat. Well, it's not put your credibility on the line. It is burn your credibility to support putting your thumb on the scale. You know, if you told the truth for 30 years in a row, you can tell a lie and it will be believed. You know, and for a little while, you got inertia. Basically, the momentum of telling the truth that they had built up allowed them to switch to lies and be believed. And they were able to get Joe Biden elected, just barely. And they've still got some. They've got credibility to throw in the trash and get people to believe them. Some people. I don't know. They're losing their power. And maybe they were going to lose their power any which way you looked at it because of modern technology. And so may as well use that to, you know, what I think is attack the people you hate. You know, if you graduated from a fancy school and live in a fancy city like New York, what you hate is a middle American white man. So use it or lose it, or use it while you got it. It's going away, may as well use it. And it's tricky because, you know, how deranged are you? Because what it empowers Joe Biden and the people, you know, people like that, the people in power to do what they want. The checks and balances, the criticism that the Biden administration should get as they turn foreign countries to rubble of concrete full of the bodies of dead children so that American arms manufacturers can make money. Well, you can't bring that up. If you bring that up, you're helping Trump. So you just, you know, you got to remain silent on that kind of stuff. I mean, you tell yourself a false narrative, because otherwise, whatever, it's going to be hard to get up. And Biden did the Inflation Reduction Act. It was one of his big successes. I looked that one up the other day. You know where the biggest part of that was money that went to oil companies. I mean, every bit of it was money to rich people. But anyways, the number one part of it was money to oil companies. But this election is a knife's edge. If you point that out, then you're helping Donald Trump. So basically, it's just total silence on all this evil stuff. It's kind of like the average American is bent over a barrel getting rammed. And off in the distance is Donald Trump. And the media is like, Donald Trump is doing it. He's the one doing it. And Joe Biden is just like breathing in your ear. There's an interesting thing going on where when you hear someone who's pro-Trump talk about Trump, they talk about the things that he did and the stuff that happened when he was president. And then when you hear anti-Trump people talk about Trump, they talk about all the things that Trump has said and is saying. Things that Trump has done and probably will do, versus things that Trump has said and stuff he has said he will do in the future. Stuff he will actually do and stuff he says he will do. Not the same thing. Now, personally, I choose the stuff that actually happened, you know, the actual lives that were made better. But, you know, I mean, just saying it like that. Obviously, that's post hoc reasoning. I wanted to see Trump in a better light because I hate his enemies. And so I just go, oh, well, I just go by what he did. I go what the actual effect on people's lives. And if I had Trump Derangement Syndrome, I'd be like, did you hear what he said? He's going to be worse than Hitler. Basically, you can either side can choose the things to emphasize and then, you know, instantly prove their point. So I think arguments going forward are going to be dancing around the fact of what he did, what he said is he's going to do. You know, and people should just be like, let's cut this off at the chase. I go by what he did. You go by what he says he's going to do. Therefore, you know, we will never agree. I go by helping real people in their lives. Oh, yeah, well, me and my blue army online are going to cancel you. Oh, wait, we can't do that. And again, I'm just slipping into the thing that makes my opinion look good. But let's listen to a clip of David Green. He's the center on Left, Right, and Center, which means he's far left compared to the general public. But for NPR, he is center. And he's wrestling with the media should tell the truth, but Trump is worse than Hitler, which puts him in a very sticky wicket. I mean, all he has to do to square that whole circle is just go, you know what? Trump isn't worse than Hitler. Let's just tell the truth. Or buzzwords, democracy, autocracy. We need to lie to the public.
With Moa Lathy and Sarah Isger talking about the media, journalists, and how we are going to cover the 2024 presidential election. Here's my question. Like, I, as a journalist, believe in democracy. I support democracy. I am a...
Good for you.
I believe in a free press. I believe in democracy. I think that Donald Trump is very transparently and pretty brazenly acting anti-democratic in a lot of ways right now when he talks about his plans to dismantle institutions, to pack the federal bureaucracy with people who support him. I mean, he has praised authoritarian leaders around the world. So I think the bind that a lot of journalists are in is, how can we be passionate believers in democracy and not be biased in a presidential election? And that's what I come back to, what you both keep telling me is this pipe dream, but that I'm not going to let it go, that it is possible for some journalists, you know, some to not cave to pressure from their echo chamber audiences, not cave to pressure from what is the successful business model, and cover this election in a way that says, I believe in democracy, but one of the core principles of democracy is voters get to decide. So I will, till the last day, describe the stakes of this election and say, these are the two leaders and philosophies and styles of government that you have before you. It is your choice.
So basically, I hate Donald Trump because of his words. And then here, let's listen to a clip of Ben Shapiro, who's like, I love Donald Trump because of what he did.
It was better off under Donald Trump than it is under Joe Biden. At home, America was safer and more prosperous. When Donald Trump was president, we did not have an open border. We were not flooding our country with at least 7 million illegal immigrants, overwhelming our cities, leaving our country wide open to the plague of Chinese and Mexican drug cartel-backed fentanyl poisoning. When Donald Trump was president, we didn't have a president who tried to use the Occupational Safety and Health Administration to force 80 million Americans to take a vaccine or lose their jobs. And my company didn't have to sue to stop it. When Donald Trump was president, we didn't have 40-year highs in inflation and decreasing real wages. When Donald Trump was president, we didn't have a federal attempt to teach children that boys can be girls and vice versa, or to force taxpayers to subsidize abortion.
So anyways, if you see how the two sides talk about it, you know, what he did, how things were, what he said, what he's gonna do, I believe he's gonna do. Anyways, if you start noticing that stuff, you'll notice it a lot. But I was listening to a journalist on a podcast the other day talking about how they were writing an article. And it was a not right-wing journalist. It was a left-wing guy. And he was describing how, you know, he'd been writing articles, doing journalism for decades. And when he was going to write an article, he used to go do some research to get the information to write the article. But he would also check what the mainstream media was saying on the topic. And he said now when he writes an article, he goes and gathers the information. He doesn't bother checking what the media is saying on the topic. And he didn't say why. This is maybe the answer that I'm looking for. So is it because the media's reporting is too slanted? So why would you check what they're saying? You know the propaganda they're putting out, so you don't need to check. Or the public doesn't trust what the media says, so therefore they're inconsequential. Or, you know, viewership and readership is way down, and interest rates have changed and they're going out of business, so that's why they're inconsequential. I mean, the media is losing its power. It's going away. Maybe it doesn't matter exactly why, but it is happening, so that's all that matters. And it kind of seems to me I still hear people checking what the New York Times says about stuff. But maybe it used to be they'd be like, oh, the LA Times said this thing, or, you know, the official opinion can be found in the Washington Post. But you don't really hear that. You only hear the New York Times nowadays. And they're kind of famously the only one who has been able to weather this internet storm, because they have paid monthly subscribers. They get their money from that. They got a ton of subscribers. So do they do journalism that's such a high quality it's worth checking because they're making money and they can pay for good journalists? I think the Washington Post lost like $250 million last year. And they're owned by Jeff Bezos, the Amazon guy. They got Amazon money. So the Washington Post is still paying for journalists, but maybe the readership has kind of dried up. So it's not whether or not you can pay for a journalist, it's whether or not there are readers is whether or not what you say is important. I don't know. And maybe if the New York Times is the only voice that matters, like, you know, nothing else matters, and they came under new management maybe a year and a half ago that was less Trump deranged, still plenty deranged, but much less deranged. Maybe that's not a microcosm of going on, but that is the whole shebang. I mean, how long can you rah-rah proxy war, sis-boom-bah? If you can't keep it up for 2 years and 9 months, then that's the election. And the Left, Right, and Center podcast this week was talking about the media. I mean, they've got a very strong vibe of Trump is worse than Hitler. And the guy who plays the left person on that, he's totally deranged. A lot of times I just fast forward when he starts speaking. But he tells a story. He had a job on Fox News as being the left-wing guy they would bring on. And there was this Mueller-Russia report about Trump. And so he was being brought on to the talk shows on Fox News to talk about it. And he was saying, you know, the same day that the report came out on CNN and MSNBC, it was just nothing but people saying, smoking gun, Trump is going to be brought away in handcuffs, taken away. And then he was in the green room at Fox News, and it was people like, yeah, totally exonerated. I mean, he's telling this story. You can use that story to double check reality. Was Trump taken away in handcuffs? No. Okay, then CNN and MSNBC were deceiving you, and Fox News was telling you the truth, or at least closer to the truth. Anyways, him telling that story about his left-wing side being completely wrong about everything did not change his opinion on nothing. It was just kind of fun. But even though they're deranged, there was an inkling on that show that the truth might help Trump. What do you do when telling the truth helps Trump? I mean, you know, like I say, normally you just self-deception. But how long can you keep that up? I mean, I guess this is kind of that scientific paradigm shift I was talking about the other week, where when quantum physics came about, physicists didn't change their mind. You had to wait for a generation of physicists to die off, and then everyone believed the new thing that was obviously correct. So maybe we're basically watching the media companies get old and die, and then that's the only way you'll get things that tell the truth. Because the right-wing lady on Left, Right, and Center, she was saying that a reporter came to her back when she worked for the government, and a reporter was like, I want to tell the truth, but the truth is going to help Donald Trump, so I'm not going to do that. You know, can you help me square that circle with some different information? And the main host of the show was shocked at that. He's like, what? I can't believe a journalist would do that. I mean, that's all they do. I used to say, you know, I used to love the New York Times. I used to read the Sunday paper every week, get it at Safeway. And then Trump derangement and Black Lives Matter, they became a bunch of liars. But, you know, you could believe them when every year they wrote their article about how to cook your Thanksgiving turkey and not have it come out dry. But in 2020, like, that's not true. And that year they'd be like, oh, if you just tell people how to cook a moist turkey, that might help Trump win. I mean, you know, who likes turkeys? White people. That will give them positive emotions about their holidays and the country in general, and he's president. So it's like, okay, we got to add a bunch of stuff about, you know, systemic racism against the Indians, and let me tell you why eating turkey is bad. And then finally, here's how you cook it so it's moist, right? Like that was the kind of BS you'd have to add to your turkey story, was systemic racism. But anyways, I'm looking for information on the media losing its power. Is it losing it because of too many lies, or because, you know, money changed, or, you know, or just people are going to TikTok to get their news, or what? I need a theory of the case. I don't have it, but it's something I'm watching like a hawk. And on a similar note, the Sweet Baby Inc. DEI stuff in the video game industry continued. And summary is that just like movies got woke and they suck and they're not selling good or making money, same things happened to video games. They got woke and they're losing money. And gamers online were blaming diversity, equity, and inclusion company Sweet Baby Inc. And Sweet Baby Inc. went to these gaming journalists, in quotes, who are on their, you know, who work for companies that are on their last legs, and they basically tried to cancel the gamers, calling them racist and whatnot, and shut them down. But it didn't work, and instead what happened was a bunch of unwanted attention, a spotlight, was shown on these big budget games and the companies that make them. You know, maybe people saying, look, you put all your effort into diversity and that's why your game sucks and has terrible sales. Or also, you're being racist against whites. And basically, the media, a few years ago, they could get the gamers canceled. They get the platforms to, you know, ban each gamer who brought it up or whatever. Anyways, they don't seem to have that power anymore. And the backlash seems to be the power. And then this week, the new information is that basically the federal government is part of the trying to cancel gamers thing. I think there's an organization, NGO, called Take This, that is funded by the Department of Homeland Security, partially or mostly or maybe all. So I don't know exactly what happened. I think Take This put out some statements saying, you know, America's racist and this shows how gaming is a hotbed of extremism. They were letting the buzzwords do the thinking for them. And I guess the way that used to work was the NGO would say gamers are a bunch of racists funded by the government. And then the mainstream media would be like, oh, we can, you know, we don't say gamers are a bunch of racists. We just, you know, we get a liar, put them out front and center. So you just quote the NGO saying that gamers are all racist. I want to say, you know, a few years ago, maybe it was an organization called Countering Internet Extremism, and it was, you know, is that Stanford or something? And everyone's like, oh, this is just an impartial group. And then it turned out they were funded by the U.S. government. Basically, there's something about people who play video games calling out anti-white racism that is perceived by the arms manufacturers as a threat to them. And so they use their power over the federal government to create these supposedly impartial but completely partisan organizations to, whatever, to create this false narrative and get people canceled, just the little guy. I don't really know why. I guess it's because Trump is a threat to their funding and not being racist against whites helps Trump. I guess so. But people have gotten hip to this whole way of working around narrative control. And so this time it was just like, oh, NGO says gamers are extremists. Instantly, go to their website, see where they get their money. Oh, shell company for the DHS. Anyways, shine a spotlight on that. So basically it all backfired. The only way to win is to get your opponents to go too far. I mean, I guess they should have kept their powder dry. See, the thing is about Trump is that the deep state rolled Trump up and smoked him in his four-year first presidency. And they were going to do it again. It was going to be 8 years of just smoking them. But now, after the FBI got together with big tech and rigged the 2020 election, all bets are off. I mean, I think there's a very good chance. Trump just, he wants to be liked. He wants to be friends. He's really too nice of a guy. People are like, he's like Hitler. He's actually, like, too nice of a guy. He's like the old man at the candy shop. He's too nice. And I think he's going to forgive everyone in the FBI and the CIA and the Department of Justice who's like trying to throw him in prison forever. If he wins, he'll just be like, oh, that's cool. But anyways, he wasn't going to rock the boat if he'd won in 2020. But now, maybe he's going to rock the boat this time. So they may have screwed up. But so some people are calling this situation with Sweet Baby Inc. Gamergate 2.0. And I'm not going to go into what all that is, but I think some guy had a theory that Gamergate originally, which is where, you know, oh, extremist gamers, that created the intelligence agencies and their misinformation, combating disinformation online thing. So it wasn't just a bunch of neckbeard video gamers doing something that doesn't matter, being racist, being called racist. It actually changed the way the U.S. and U.K. governments, etc., interact with the internet and, well, basically men, white men. But anyways, NGO says some group of people is racist. You go instantly check where the NGO is getting their money from. You go on the internet, thank God Elon Musk owns Twitter, and you point out that's just the government trying to rig an election. I mean, I exaggerate, but I think that's the new playbook. But anyways, Elon Musk got wind of all this stuff, and he tweeted out something. I think it wasn't the DHS part. It was the DEI part. You could switch the Ds. You could have Diversity Homeland Security and the Department of Equity and Inclusion. In fact, that probably is coming. It'll be the DEI, the Department of Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion. Boy, I just got to say, I just saved the last 6 minutes of what I've been talking about into a single file on my phone so I won't lose it. And when I used voice to text and named it Gamergate, Android knows the word Gamergate. Amazes me. It doesn't capitalize it, but it does make it all one word. But Elon Musk tweeted out this thing. It was the Quartering interviewing some high-up video game executive. Who's the Quartering? Doesn't matter. Anti-woke YouTuber. And this executive was talking about how AAA game companies get their money with ESG strings attached. So I had to look this up, but I think a AAA game, or maybe it's a game company, means a game that costs like $100 million or more to make. A lot of these games take $200, even up to $400 million to make, as much as the biggest budget movies. And then there's something called AA, which is games that cost $10 to $50 million to make. And if your game costs $75 million, I don't know what you call it. But the AAA games, the money for it doesn't come from the company and their profits of their last game. They get their money from, I don't know where, banks, probably private equity more. Things that have ESG strings attached. Specifically, you got to do DEI. You got to maybe, you know, maybe they're like, we'll give you $200 million for your sequel to Diablo 4. I'm making that up. But if you do that, you got to hire Sweet Baby Inc. to come in and put their diversity stamp on it. So ESG, woke capitalism, I won't cover all that again. But, you know, maybe the video game companies, they're getting their money from banks or something controlled by BlackRock. Well, you know, I haven't done it in a while. So ESG. E is climate change. S, well, stands for environment. S is social, which means firing whites that are your employees. And G is governance, which means firing whites who are on the board of directors. And so, you know, there's different, it just gives you power. It gives BlackRock power over every company in the Fortune 500. And one beautiful way that it does that is if you bring in your ESG, which says you can't have white men on the board of directors, for instance, because that's the thing that really does control the company at the very highest point. You go, everyone on the board of directors is a white man. We gotta replace half of the board. And then who gets to choose the replacements? BlackRock does. So, you know, it's not that they love black people. Their name may be BlackRock, but they don't love black people. What they love is being able to fire anyone just for being a white man, which just gives them superpower. You can either say, hey, white man, do what I say. Or if you don't want to do that, you can just fire them and, you know, find a black woman who will do what you want. Hey, black woman, would you like $1 million a year for doing nothing? All you have to do is vote the way I tell you to vote. I mean, I'd take that deal. But again, if you're the head of a company making tons of money, the company is and you are personally, the only thing you care about is not rocking the boat. And ESG has been getting too much scrutiny. So I think it's being dialed back. Same thing with DEI. Same thing with everything woke. It's being dialed back. But the best way for a company to stop being racist against whites is to just go out of business. I mean, if you try and actually stay in business and stop being racist against whites, you're going to get called a racist, which doesn't have the power it used to have, but it's not fun. And so this media executive that was talking to the Quartering that Elon Musk tweeted out, he was saying these big companies, it's too big a ship, they can't turn around, they're going to go out of business. They can't get out of their DEI trap, they're going to go out of business. So I don't cover video game stuff as much as I especially used to do movies, but basically it sounds like it's the exact same thing. Like in the movie industry, right now, Paramount is going out of business and is trying to sell itself. Warner Brothers is having problems and trying to sell itself. Paramount was trying to sell itself to Warner Brothers, and Warner Brothers is like, no, we're not buying you, we're trying to sell ourselves. And to finish that thought, AT&T used to own Warner Brothers. They spun them off into their own company. I mean, they used to be one too. AT&T owns 70% of Warner Brothers. And it's thought that maybe Comcast Universal is in the market to buy Paramount or Warner Brothers. And normally Disney would be out there snapping these things up, but they're struggling, so it's not thought that they're going to. Comcast Universal gets money from, you know, your monthly cable bill. So they got more money. I think they also got woke, but they didn't go broke because they've got a better source of money. But so, mainstream media, news media, movies and TV media, video game is a type of media. They're all having the same problems. There's something going on with music being fighting TikTok too. So probably the same thing's happening to music. It's probably happened to every type of media you can imagine. Who knows? Books. I'm trying to think of all the types of media. I think porn is doing okay. Hell, I'm on a roll. Let's keep going. So if the New York Times doesn't say something happened, then it didn't happen. And the other week, they said that there's pedophiles on Instagram. And the general story is adult men following child influencers who do gymnastics and dance. And the New York Times is behind a paywall. So for me, it's almost like if they say it, then it didn't happen. But I guess I hear about it secondhand. And so one of the Slate podcasts had the author on and did an interview. And it's a distasteful subject. But anyway, she said the way it happens is it's expensive to have your daughter in a gymnastics thing. And you got to like drive her to far off cities to compete. And you got to buy. There's a lot of whatever. There's a lot of buying of gymnastics clothing. And I've said it before, but women spend their money on stupid stuff. Like when I allow advertising on TikTok or something, it's like, oh, you're a man? Well, we don't have anything for you. So here's a bunch of makeup advertisements. Things that cost 7 cents to make and we can charge you $75. And hey, would you like to have it on a monthly subscription? It's just like, who the hell would be interested in an ad like that and ever spend their money on something so stupid? Well, the answer is women. Not all. But anyways, there's a bunch of overpriced crap involved with being in gymnastics or a dance group. And so one way to make up your money from that is you start an Instagram account and then the gymnastics clothing company will give you free clothing if you promote their stuff. And so supposedly that's how the moms get into this influencer thing. Taking just like picture after picture of their daughters doing poses on Instagram. Now this sounds like a moral panic that's probably been blown out of proportion, but this New York Times lady, she tells a story about a mom who did all this stuff with her daughter, and then some man started direct messaging her on Instagram, I guess. And he was like, I know you got some sexy pictures that you don't let the normal Instagram viewers see. I want those pictures. And if you don't send me those pictures, I'm gonna tell your daughter's school that you're putting sexy pictures out there. I'm gonna tell your job that they're putting sexy pictures out there. I'm gonna tell the cops you're doing it. And she wasn't doing any of that stuff. But anyways, that guy then just took normal pictures off of Instagram and sent them to the police and her daughter's school and her job and said she's selling pictures. And I guess her daughter was traumatized by having to explain her Instagram account to the principal at her school or something. Basically, it's just a distasteful thing that who cares. But Elon Musk is in a feud with Bob Iger, the CEO of Disney, about Disney taking off their advertising from Twitter, trying to, you know, blackmail or cancel Twitter, and their advertising on Instagram. And Elon Musk is like, you're advertising with the pedophiles, you know, turning down a free speech platform to advertise with the pedophiles. And it was basically like, the mainstream media says you're a racist, Elon Musk, so I don't have to listen to you. But now that the mainstream media is talking a little bit about Instagram and this stuff, we will see. Like, I think in America, Facebook and Instagram, well, Facebook is bigger than Twitter. Instagram is smaller than Twitter. So Twitter's in that ballpark. And the company, the Facebook company, is worth like $1 trillion or $1.5 trillion. A ton. And Twitter, even though it's in the ballpark size-wise, is considered worth maybe $20 billion. So Facebook is worth like 50 to 75 times as much, even though they're ballpark same size. So if Twitter could get on an even footing with advertisers, along with Instagram or something, whatever, it would give Elon Musk maybe $500 billion to promote his free speech ideas, you know, and send people to Mars. Just, there is possibly a monumental amount of money out there for Elon Musk to use if he can get out from under this, you know, you're a racist thing. Maybe. But so I used to watch TikTok when I was on the toilet or when I was barbecuing. Basically, times when I couldn't do anything else, kill some time. But I got eye problems, so I don't spend much time looking at my phone if I can help it. So I don't really watch any of these things. But like my woke buddy, he's on Facebook. He's gotten into Reels. And they call it Reels, I think, on Instagram too. So that whole, you know, Meta owns Facebook and Instagram and WhatsApp. So they call their version of TikTok Reels. YouTube has their version. They call it Shorts. It's all just the same thing as TikTok. You know, less than a minute long portrait mode camera videos. So my woke buddy is watching Reels on Facebook. He told me about it. I went and checked out Reels. And very quickly, I trained it. Like, you know, whatever you scroll past, it gives you less of, and whatever you stop and spend a few seconds watching, it gives you more of. And so I very quickly got it to show me nothing but videos of hot blondes in skimpy outfits. And I don't watch Reels very often, or almost never, but anyways, that's how I keep it. Like the other day, I accidentally watched a couple videos that were humorous, and then all of a sudden it was like going to be showing me nothing but funny videos, and I was like, so I had to go swipe through, you know, until it started showing me hot blondes again, and then I would just stop, even if I didn't care, and just watch the hot blonde for a minute and do that a few times to retrain it back to how I like it. But I went over to Instagram to see how sexy the content is, and the answer was nothing. Like, definitely there wasn't no kids gymnastics or nothing, but there wasn't any sexy videos of, you know, like hot blondes with big tits is what I would be expecting. Anyways, I swiped and swiped. They never ever showed me, you know, a 50-year-old woman with big tits even. And I'm pretty sure that's not how Instagram Reels used to be. I didn't, you know, I only used it recently. Anyways, they know they're being scrutinized. Well, the House of Representatives passed a bill saying that TikTok has to sell itself to probably an American company, but not a Chinese company, and they have to do it in the next 6 months, otherwise they're banned. And I've heard $100 million and $170 million for the amount of Americans that use TikTok, and I've heard that they use it for 90 minutes a day. I have a friend who has a daughter who's, she's probably a girl, maybe 14, and she's on it like an hour a day. Maybe that's her limit, I don't know. So it has to go to the Senate. This bill like just came out of nowhere and got passed like really quick. And it was bipartisan, which means that, you know, the uniparty, everyone agrees, which probably means that the military-industrial complex or something is what's promoting it to get it going through that fast in the Republican House. And then Donald Trump was like, well, hey, don't pass that, but it's going so fast. I think that's why they're doing it so fast, is because they don't want Trump to say, don't do it. And that's why they didn't pass it in the Senate first, and then it has to go to the House, and Donald Trump can affect it. It's like, oh, already out of the House. Sorry, Trumpy. And Trump is friends with some billionaire who owns a lot of TikTok, so maybe that's why. People would bring up that the Trump administration tried to ban TikTok, but who knows if that was Trump himself or the deep state or who knows. But China does not allow our social media companies to work in China, so maybe reciprocity says you can't do it. You know, if we can't do it, you can't do it. or China's spying on our children, or brainwashing our children, think of the children, or, I don't hear this a lot, but I kind of think this is the one, but election interference. And I think it's Democrats who say that, so if a Democrat says they don't want it interfering in the upcoming election, it's not because they think it's going to interfere and help Biden, so they, some people think it will help Trump somehow. And then it's a $100 billion company. If it wasn't owned by China, it'd probably be a $1 trillion company. But people have been knowing that there's a good chance that it would have to be sold. If you have to sell something, it makes the price a lot lower because, you know, where are you going to go? In 6 months, you can't wait. And in fact, 6 months, you can't even get a deal started barely this big. It's like, who can afford to buy it? Apple, they would make it woke. I'm not a big fan of this thing because I feel like they're going to make it woke. If they make it anti-woke, then fine. Yeah, screw China and make it anti-woke. But Apple, Microsoft, they're the big rich companies that don't already own a social media company like, you know, Facebook. Facebook can't buy it. They already are a competitor. So anyways, Apple and Microsoft are woke. They would probably be like, okay, first thing we do is thumb on the scale for Biden. And if you just ban the thing, maybe that's why you say 6 months, because you know it won't get done. Then, you know, the 100 million Americans, I guess they'll just be going to Facebook, Instagram. Twitter needs to really get on the ball with their TikTok thing. I've been waiting for Twitter to have a TikTok thing. I'll summarize in one word and then move on. Nipples. And then Steve Mnuchin, who was Treasury Secretary under Trump, and basically the only guy in the Trump administration I think that people think is a phenomenally competent person, he's trying to put together something to buy TikTok. I don't know. I don't know if he can do that, but Slate Money mentioned that, so maybe he has a shot. And he's not a company with a giant internet presence, which brings up antitrust problems. And I mentioned him the other week because he created a thing called America First Legal, which is suing companies for DEI stuff. So we'll see. Let's throw in a little conspiracy theory here, though. So maybe they're not worried about TikTok getting Trump elected, is some other political thing. Like what's been in the news lately is about how TikTok has been turning the youth against Israel and making them pro-Palestinian. Well, that's the end of the episode. Links in the description, and thanks for listening.